Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
That's why we can't have nice things, Vice.
I know.
No, that Vice is advice.
Oh, Jesus.
See, now I know who I'm talking
to. Either the best compliment or insult I've ever received. I'm not sure which one.
Hello, listeners. I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, arts, action sports, and subculture. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Monday night movie Munchies, checking out new music from Ryan Tanner and The Moth and the Flame, doing the weekly calendar rundown with editor Angela H. Brown, talking to Adam Sherlock from Sending Messages, and checking back in for an update with the Occupy SLC movement. Groovy Cinema Pub is a well-known bar and movie theater in Salt Lake City. The theater occasionally hosts free film nights, including ones put on by The Geek Show, City Weekly, and other organizations. Groovy's started Monday Night Movie Munchies to give their staff a chance to pick free movies that people would like to check out. Here's Slug's Clayton Godby speaking with Robbie Petrich about Monday Night Movie Munchies.
Tell me a little bit about what Mondays are like.
Well, when it first started out, Mondays were, you know, predominantly slow compared to the other nights. So we were like, dude, we should just start playing, now that we have this really nice projector, we should just start playing, you know, like classic movies that everyone likes, like we all grew up with and stuff. First movie was Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and it sold out. It was insane. We didn't know what we were getting into. And then after that, it was Ghostbusters. Then I think after that was Beetlejuice, or maybe Batman. We kind of stopped it for a little bit. Like, remember we had The Hangover, like the first Hangover, the good Hangover. We had that.
Yeah.
And that movie was top grossing film ever for Groovies. So to appease the film companies, you know, we had to stop doing a free movie in that theater for those nights. So we had to play it all. So we kind of stopped playing the Monday night movies for a few months there. And we were like, you know, super butthurt about that. We're like, oh man, the Monday movies were so good. Like, everyone that came in were regulars. We knew most people that came in by name, you know. It's like 100 people at least, I'd say, we knew by name. Because we're awesome. Then we got it back. Some people came back. I think some people didn't know we started playing them again, you know. It's almost always a killer night. Sometimes if it's like a holiday weekend or school's about to start or if it's just gorgeous outside, you know. It's not as crazy, but for the most part, for the 3 years, I mean, Monday nights are like probably one of the most coveted shifts to work, even at previews, just because it's like freaking awesome.
Everybody wants to work film buff night.
Mm-hmm.
How would Monday nights differ from like the Geek Show podcast nights or KRCL nights or City Weekly when they do screenings?
Definitely the hour is different since you play them at 10. You know, it's mostly either people that are night owls or people that don't mind not having any sleep for work the next day. It's also a bit different, you know, with the Geek Shows, which I love those. I go to most of them. It's a certain fan base, you know, like these guys, and I myself am a geek, but I consider myself a pretty cool one, right, Eggs?
Yeah.
It's a lot of soda drinkers and chicken strip eaters for the geek shows, which is awesome. You know, you still want people to buy stuff and come hang out. Geek Show has double features, which is, I wish we could do that, but it's just way too late. Monday nights, yeah, it's a totally different crowd. It's a lot of the bike kids and like the slug kids come in, a lot of college students, and then we have some great regulars who've been coming in forever. We have a guy that comes in that's he owns his own tax business and he does some of our taxes. He comes in every Monday night. We always know what he wants.
Trade offs
up. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, so it's different in both customers and, you know, movies here and there, because we'll play movies that, you know, Geek Show wouldn't play.
What are some of the movies that have done really well? Like, what sorts of movies do really well on these nights?
Oh, geez. Well, definitely, you know, Ghostbusters. Big Lebowski is probably our biggest. We put that one twice. Last time, you know, I used to dress up for the Monday night movies, but I just kind of don't have the time now. to go get costumes and stuff before work. But people come dressed up as the dude and, you know, a bunch of other characters from, like, John Goodman's character. Yeah, people dress up for the Big Lebowski, and it's fucking crazy. Like, we sold, like, 92 White Russians, I think, last time we played it. So Scott and I stopped by the store before coming into work, and we're sure to have, like, we had, like, soy milk for the vegans. Mm-hmm. We had vitamin D for the fat kids, and then we had regular, you know, like, milk for, you know, whatever. But yeah, Big Lebowski kills. Orgasmo is always awesome. There's a lot of people that come dressed as Big Lebowski, or as Orgasmo or Toto Boy with dildos on their heads and stuff. I don't know if the DABC would like that now. There's a dildo on someone's head in a bar where they're drinking. that movie killed. Ghostbusters 1 and 2 was just phenomenal. Yeah, for the most part, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure was huge. Yeah, but you know, all the major classics, like the staples from like the 80s.
Yeah.
Just slay.
It sounds like audience interaction, and as I've come to a few of these, I've noticed there's a lot of audience interaction. Is that something you guys support and promote? It just seems like a really fun night.
Yeah, totally. I mean, within reason, if there's some drunk asshole in there just like screaming for no reason. Occasionally. I mean, I've maybe asked four people to leave, like, the whole, like, 3 years we've been doing this, just because they're just so disruptive, and I know it's a free movie, that's why we encourage people, like, yeah, laugh, joke, make jokes, whatever, have fun, it's a free movie, everyone's drinking, we're having a good time, but if someone just gets in there and gets a little too crazy,
yeah,
it's time to give them the people's elbow.
Sure. Since the movie is free and the billiards are free all night, does it seem like people buy more drinks, or do you have a lot of kind of, you know?
Before precious Senator Valentine decided to lobby to have bars lose their beer specials and drink specials, it seemed like people bought a lot more Bud Light and Budweiser. But, I mean, that certainly hasn't stopped anyone from buying drinks. You know, kind of costs people a little bit more, but, you know, we're somewhat competitive in the price range. You know, we don't want to be a super cheap place where we just have hobos in here drinking all the time, but we don't want to be, you know, a really expensive place where no one wants to go. So, yeah, it encourages people, I think, especially with the free pool after the movie, sometimes people stick around and play some billiards and stuff. That's what you call it, billiards, right?
Billiards.
What you guys call it?
There's no free water place to hang out. No one's showing up at the pool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. I like having the free pool up until midnight and everything.
Monday Night Movie Munchies is completely free for those 21 and over. For showtimes and other information, check out the theater's website at Broovies.com. It's rhyme time, time to rhyme. Some words sound just like others, like one. Ryan Tanner started his music career as the lead singer and guitarist for the Salt Lake City Americana band Atherton. The group received positive press when their song California was used for MTV's Laguna Beach soundtrack. After the band's breakup in 2009, Tanner began work on his solo career. He recently released an acoustic EP, 7 Years, this past September. Here's a song from that EP, Peaceful Mind.
What did they say? We lose our way in these fields of long decay. They missed the mark when they missed the spark that gives the fire its heart. With a peaceful mind and these ties that bind, I'll be waiting for you on the other side. With a peaceful mind and these ties that bind, I'll be waiting. waiting for you on the other side. Built a house and planted trees, and knotweed swim in the pale green sea. We raised the kids and let them go, and they returned with seeds all of their own. With a peaceful mind and these ties to bind, and I'll be waiting for you on the other side. With a peaceful mind and these ties to bind, and I'll be waiting for you on the other side.
You can download the complete 8-track EP for $5 at ryantanner.bandcamp.com. For more on Tanner's upcoming shows and bonus tracks, visit ryantannermusic.com. SpyHop Productions hired local podcaster Adam Sherlock in 2009 for a unique audio project. The premise? Giving youth at a Utah corrections facility audio equipment to create their own podcasts. The show, Sending Messages, made its debut in the summer of 2010. With content ranging from poetry to short fiction and narratives, Sending Messages entices listeners with sometimes hard-to-handle subjects. Here's Slug's Ben Trendelman speaking with Sherlock.
Can you give me an overview of the podcast itself? What are these guys talking about, and how has it been in getting it cranked up out there in the facility, and just some of the obstacles that you've had to deal with?
The way the show is set up is most of these kids aren't kids that have grown up with really pretty significant issues in terms of if it was gang affiliation or drugs and alcohol or violence, and so they're not really like the NPR crowd, and so most of them in the beginning kind of think like, oh, radio, like we're going to be DJs, we're going to, you know, play our own music and all this, and so, you know, you kind of have to dial it back to a place of letting them listen to some examples and see like why it's important to tell stories and why radio is important. So I usually start by having them write letters, and I have them write letters to people they can't send them to. So students will write to God, or they'll write to loved ones who passed away. And, you know, it's not hard to get these kids to talk about really significant things, because that's what they've got on their mind, are these really, really big issues, these very adult kind of themes. The way that we set the show up is we come up with topics for each episode, you know, forgiveness or telling the truth, like these large sort of broad themes. Then they each individually write their own piece about that, and it can be anything from a personal narrative to more of a radio play or an interview based piece, even slam poetry. I've had kids kind of create their own little studio in certain closets and, you know, little back rooms and stuff where they'll make hip-hop songs. It really sort of spans this wide array, and from really, really serious and heartbreaking stuff to very funny stuff. They get really creative with how they want to express themselves. We've also done episodes for, like right now we're getting, with my new class, we're getting ready to do a Halloween episode. And so they're all writing stories that are, you know, they're doing these sort of essay pieces based upon, like, you know, a zombie. Okay, well, I'm going to do, my whole piece is going to be about zombies. And so I'm going to get online and research, like, George Romero, and I'm going to talk about, you know, Haiti and Haitian voodoo culture and where the idea of zombies came from. But then the second part of my piece is going to be about a time in my life when I felt like a zombie, when I felt mindless, or that I was just going through the motions of something. So they'll a lot of times tie things together that way, where part of it will be personal and part of it will be just more of sort of for informational or entertainment value. In terms of red tape, the kids come up with their own alias names because it's all confidential. They're all in state's custody and under 18. We take the stories, we have them go through the proper channels of the administration at the facility. I have my own set of rules. I essentially will let the kids talk about anything they want as long as it doesn't glorify. So I'll tell them, like, all right, you got to sell me on this. Like, why did you say this here? Or why did you say that there? That ends up being a really cool interaction because it makes the students, you know, I've had kids tell me, like, you know, I wrote that story about that time that me and my friend beat that kid up, and writing a story about it, I've thought about that event 1,000 times more than I ever did before writing it. And it's because you have to kind of talk about, like, what's your motivation? You know, a lot of the people that listen to the show have never had any kind of experiences like that in their lives, and you need to make it make sense. You know, take accountability, but make it make sense, and that in turn makes them write better stories.
What kind of feedback have you been getting from the listeners or from the families of these guys that are doing the podcast, or even staff out at the facility? What have they had to say about it? Has it been positively impacting these guys? Or?
Definitely. It's been really interesting, actually. I mean, I think that, you know, I think for a lot of these guys, their lives are so complicated that you can't just say, oh, we did this podcast show, and then they got out and they came to Spy Hop and took a bunch of classes and their lives turned around. It'd be great if that's the way it was, but it's just not realistic. But as far as the feedback goes, you know, with family members, it's been really neat. Actually, at some of the students' graduations out at the facility, we played some of their pieces, and it's neat because you get to see that they get to actually see some of their audience. We've had, you know, some family members from this kid's family are really big fans of the poetry that this kid over here makes. And so at the graduation, they wanted to meet him. And they wanted to meet him not as a kid in the youth corrections facility, but as a poet. And that's really neat. You know, that's a neat, it's the first time that youth has had that kind of an interaction where he has a reputation and it's a positive one. I've gotten feedback from staff. I've gotten feedback that was incredibly positive. We've gotten feedback from members of the parole board that sit on the parole board for these kids. And those have been really, those responses have been really interesting.
Wow, yeah.
You know, because they say, well, we see one side of them. And a lot of times if they're being compassionate or they're showing empathy and things like that, we're wondering if we're getting smoke blown at us because we sit on the parole board, right? And so to just hear these stories where these kids, there's no ramifications for them to be totally honest.
Yeah.
They get to hear that, and it really blows their minds. And I've been able to sit down and have some pretty interesting conversations with them about that. So all around, it's been really, really positive. And I was being a little bit spurious before, but we actually have had some students from the program end up at Spy Hop in some of our more core classes. And so it is starting to work. I mean, we've been doing it for almost 2 years, well, a little over 2 years, actually. And it's slow, but you can start to get these kids involved. It's really neat.
Where are these guys saying themselves as they're going through the program and they're going through the whole process, or maybe even having these feelings exposed for the first time and everything like that? Are they well receptive to that? Are they open to that? Or are you feeling resistance?
No, the kids love it. You get sort of a blind group of 8 or 9 students, and you don't know who's really going to flourish and who isn't. I mean, I've had students who are borderline illiterate, but the software, you know, we use GarageBand, and the software is so easy to use. They can make single word notes for themselves, go and interview someone about a topic, take that interview, put it in a GarageBand, edit all of it, make this amazing, really intense piece, and they've never done anything like that before because they can't really write well or read well. So to suddenly be able to give them this tool where they can take it to this whole new level, that might be a kid that, had I looked at it in terms of who's a good writer, who reads a lot, I might never have chosen that kid. But instead, you just kind of get this group of students, and that's who you have to work with. And the students really dig it. A lot of times it's in very different ways. I mean, I've had one student who got really into poetry and never knew that that was something that he was into. He actually is quite talented at it. And I had known this kid before he was at the corrections facility. And I, you know, just thought of him, I mean, I hate to say it, but I just thought of him as kind of a gangbanger. And he suddenly was writing this heartbreaking, you know, emotional, really intense poetry that was just amazing. And so a lot of these kids end up tapping into these talents they didn't know they had, or even just thinking introspectively about the world, you know, for some of those guys, maybe not for the first time, but the first time that they've ever, like, put it down on paper and, like, really thought about it. And with some of these guys, I'll end up, you know, they'll work on a piece for a couple of weeks, and I'll be like, you know, you're writing an essay, right? You know that all this research you've done and, like, looking at it and moving this sentence there and, like, shortening this part and lengthening that part, you're writing an essay. And they're like, yeah, but this is fun. You know, they don't see it as in the same way as what they would have been kicking and screaming doing in school. And so, but it's incredibly popular out at the facility, and the kids do. They really, really like it.
To hear complete episodes and find out more about the project, check out the show online at spyhop.org/sendingmessages or search out the show on iTunes. It's time once again to do the weekly calendar rundown, which you can check out on our website or in the back of our magazine. And we're sitting here with editor Angela H. Brown. How are you doing, Angela?
What's up?
And actually, we have a guest this time. I'm very excited about Joshua Joy.
A very special guest, Joshua Joy.
Hey, how's it going out there?
Great.
For those of you in podcast land, Joshua Joy is our head issue designer. He makes our words look pretty in print.
He's the mastermind behind all the nice madness. Thanks, Josh, for joining us, by the way.
Yeah, no problem with that there.
We're going to talk to you in a second, Josh. First, we're going to talk about what's going on November 8th at the Depot. Do you know anything about Mastodon?
I don't know really much about Mastodon, but I know their new album that came out, the artwork for it, is a really awesome designer who does all this woodcut stuff. It's an amazing artist featured in Juxtapose.
But what's the artist's name?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up, but he's actually grown really fast. I'm not surprised that they used him as the artist.
Cool.
It's called The Hunter, right?
Yeah,
yes,
sure.
Uh-huh. It is. And it's I really like Mastodon, although The Hunter isn't my favorite thing that they have put out. We did an interview with them and put them on the cover back in 2005. It was the April 2005 issue, if you want to check it out. Back before the lead singer got that crappy facial tattoo.
I saw that in the decibel, yeah.
Well, I'm glad we had you chime in early, Josh. You had something to say about Mastodon. Mm-hmm. You're very varied.
I love decibel, so, you know.
I love the Metal Mamas column.
Yeah.
And November 10th, which is a Thursday at Urban Lounge. I don't know if I'm going to the show or not. Are you excited about this one, Angela?
Oh, hell yeah, I'm excited about this one, although I've never seen Scott H. Byram. Josh Choi has numerous times, and he's always telling me, you gotta go, and I haven't gone.
Well, for one thing, I've seen him maybe 4 times. He is a one-man band, so there's nobody else that plays with him. He plays probably at least 3 to 4 instruments at the same time.
Oh.
It's from Austin, Texas. His new album's pretty good. I've listened to it a little bit, but it's a lot different from the older ones, but it's not bad.
A lot of good songs about lost loves, about drinking, about, you know, the rough and tough life of a bluesman.
What's up next, Angela?
On Sunday, November 13th at the State Room, The Devil Makes Three is playing with Brown Bird. We did a feature earlier this year in our July issue with The Devil Makes Three. Rockabilly type band. State Room's always a really fun venue, especially if you have, if it's a school night, because they do shows, which it looks like this one will be being on a Sunday evening. So you can usually get out of there before 11 o'clock. Yeah, it should be a fun night.
And Monday, November 14th, we've got a birthday. Happy birthday to Lindsay Morris. She's a Slug designer. And speaking of design stuff, something fun starts November 14th.
Yes, it's going to be the opening of the first ever Salt Lake Design Week, which is hosted by the AIGA. And that night, they're for their opening event. They are doing something called Pixels of Fury. From what I understand, they're getting together some designers, and I think you could probably just register on their website if you want to compete, but they're doing a live competition. Sort of, I guess, the best way to describe it from what I understand is that it will be Iron Chef style. So they will set you down with a computer with everyone will have the same fonts on it, the same programs, and they will give you a theme and probably a piece of clip art or something, since I believe a stock photography company is sponsoring it, Shutterstock. So they'll probably give you some sort of image or something to work with, and you will, using a theme and whatever restrictions they will give you at a time restraint, you'll have to come up with something cool.
You gonna do that, Josh?
I don't know. I mean, I did a lot of it in college in the early days.
The early 80s? Like,
no, it sounds like an original assignment that you would do with the rest of the class as a practice. No.
Well, if you do, I'll make a sign and come down and cheer for you.
All right, deal.
Thank you, Joshua Joy, special guest, for the rundown the first time. And thanks to Angela Brown. For more daily calendar info, check out our front page at slugmag.com. There's a grid there, or you can read our hard copy. It's in the back. Check it out. Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, JP.
Thanks.
The Moth and the Flame are an alternative rock duo based in Provo, Utah. Guitarist Brandon Robbins and keyboardist Mark Gerbetz formed the band in spring of 2011. TM and TF will be releasing their debut self-titled album on 11-11-11. Here's How We Woke Up from their new album.
Power.
The release show for the album is at Velour with Soft Science and Book on Tapeworm. The show starts at 8 p.m. and the cover is just $5. To find out more about the band, see their music video, and join their mailing list, visit their website at howwewokeup.com. We're sitting here with Skylar Hawk, a 22-year-old retail employee and a two-time Occupy Salt Lake spokesperson nominee, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
We're trying to get some more information about the Occupy SLC movement from the last time we checked in on October 6th with you guys. We covered that first date you guys went on the marches and established your camps down there. How's it been since then?
Real good. I mean, we're gaining about 5/10 a day, so that's been really positive. The movement's growing. It seems that the media is picking up on it really well. We haven't had any negative media so far, so it's all going really well.
And how has it changed from its original conception at the early planning meetings?
Oh, a lot. I mean, when you get this many people in a group dynamic where they're significantly involved in every single aspect of the day-to-day life, the situations, the kitchen, the sanitation, you have a lot of opinions that come into it, but democracy takes time and it, you know, takes a lot of effort. So the whole dynamic is growing all the time, and it's been really interesting to see how it grows.
And how is this different or the same as the other occupation protests in the U.S.?
Well, of course, we all have relatively the same message, so that's where we're similar. I think every Occupy movement probably has to deal with different problems. A lot of people have had a lot more problems with the police, negative media, that kind of stuff. Whereas we've had interesting, I won't say issues because it's actually been a really good learning experience for all of us. The homeless population that's already down there, it's been really nice to be able to work with them. We're helping them out with food and clothing. It started as a challenge because we felt like we might be encroaching on what was their space, but really it turned out that we can really co-op together. But that's been one of our biggest issues that I'm not sure how many other Occupy movements really had to deal with that. Other than that, I think, you know, the message is the same. We're pushing for the same thing, so really I think they're mostly similar.
How long do you think that's going to take, and will these protests ever end?
Well, that's a really good question, and it's a common one. You know, how long are we going to stay there? I think Occupy Wall Street has made the stance that they're going to stay there indefinitely until our grievances are recognized and solved. I really personally want to keep that stance here in Salt Lake. It's going to get really cold, and I know a lot of people are, you know, saying maybe a month, maybe a week, but I think there is a core group of us that really want to stay and make sure that we are recognized and that this is vocalized and recognized and solved and really worked with the people to make the solutions that we want. So I want to say indefinitely.
So will you explain the hierarchy and the way that the system works?
Really, the hierarchy is very, very minimal. I mean, it's really just based on your own level of involvement. If you want to be more involved, all you really have to do is sign up for, and you don't even really have to sign up, just show up and volunteer your time, do that consistently, and all of a sudden you're more informed just because you're consistently there. And that's really how the hierarchy works. I mean, as far as representatives, as far as the media is concerned, the only reason that we voted those people in, myself included, was just to have a solidified message to the people outside of the occupation. As far as the hierarchy within, every time a General Assembly happens, somebody else is made kind of the leader of the General Assembly that just kind of keeps the peace and brings things to the table. So really, it's just you decide your own level of involvement. And that way, when anybody gets upset, they're like, oh, this is the elitist just running the group. And you can just say, no, all you got to do is get involved. If you want to do something, just sign up to do it. The more you know and the more involved you are, the more you work through the structure.
Couldn't that lead to people's ideals getting in the way instead of the group as a whole? Because if people are getting involved based on how much they want to be involved, that's pretty similar to other systems.
Yeah. I mean, and it does create problems. Definitely on a day-to-day basis, you see a lot of people who bring both their ego and their own political or mental agendas into things. And that's really the job of the collective to kind of recognize that, kind of talk them off the ledge a little bit and remind them why we're here. Also, we're a movement that is all-encompassing, so we completely support a diversity of tactics and ideals. So anybody can say something as a person, and that doesn't mean that they represent the group as a whole. So that really allows people all the freedom that they want to do, you know what I mean? The only basic rules that we have in camp aren't really even rules. They're just say we strongly advocate a no violence, no weapons, no drugs, and no alcohol policy just for the safety of everybody involved. And the fact that the police are our friends so far, but, you know, if people start acting in a way where they have to come in and monitor us, they're not going to be very happy. So other than that, it's really just trying to get all of these ideals and everybody's ideals to mesh together and solve problems.
You mentioned the word freedom there, and I want to touch on that a little bit. Some people are of the opinion that everyone should be free, and more than just a libertarian viewpoint, some sort of anarchy.
Yeah.
You guys have that element down there. I noticed on that first day there were some anarchists there. Do they play a part in the group at all? Is that your goal, anarchy? Is there a better system?
There's a wide variety, a good diverse group of people that have a lot of ideals. Anarchy is one of them. I've met communists down there. I've met Republicans down there. I've met Democrats down there. I've met socialists, everybody, the wide variety of people. As of now, the system that we're running is somewhat of an anarchy system, but it's really, we try and make it a pure democracy. And as far as the system that we want to put in place, I don't think that most of the people, and I'm speaking of, again, as a person, not as, you know, a messenger of the movement at this moment, is most people like the system, they just think it needs reform. You know, it's not that most people want to abolish capitalism or abolish, you know, our republic or whatever. It's more that people want to see it reformed in a way that works for everybody. And so I think what most people are pushing for is a true democracy where each person decides their own level of involvement. If they want to be involved in decision making, they should be able to do that without having to jump through the hoops of the political standard as it is right now.
You guys go on marches occasionally.
Yeah.
When was the last march and when's the next march?
We do them daily between either 6 or noon, and that's voted, and I think they're alternating right now. I believe yesterday was 6 p.m., and so I believe Monday will be a noon. Saturdays and Sundays are a little more open. Sunday is more of a relaxed day. Saturday, we sometimes do 2 marches, sometimes 1. It's all going to be on our website under events calendar, all on our Facebook, so you'll be informed and you can check it all out there.
So you created the Facebook page, which is what, by the way? Can you tell me?
Facebook.com Occupy Salt Lake City is the main page. It's our info page. And then there's like 16 other pages that are related to it. All of our committees have their own pages, which are like Occupy SLC, Food Committee, or First Aid Committee. And then also we have a open forum discussion page called Occupy SLC Discussion. And that is just for anybody to voice their opinions, negative, positive, whatever.
And you've got a OccupySLC.org site.
.org, yep.
And the official Twitter, is there one? I've seen a few.
There is a few. I think that it's Occupy Salt Lake is the official one that's being run by the same guy who runs our website. There's an Occupy_SLC that's been kind of doing more of an opinion-based ideal, his own thing. But he's really helped spread some news as well. But if you want the official one, yeah, it's Occupy Salt Lake.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered yet you think is noteworthy that you'd like to bring up at all?
Well, I'd just like to let everybody know as well that there's a free school that goes on down there where we try and get people educated on a wide, wide variety of things. Today we had a speaker on the Mayan calendar. We've had people sign up to do socioeconomic speeches. So it's really cool. There's a lot of things you can get involved if you want to come down and just check it out and see what we're about. You know, we're not just a bunch of crazy hippies in the park. I mean, some of us are, but there really is some good movement and some good conversation going on, and I would invite anyone and everyone to join us and come see what we're about.
Thanks for listening to Sound Waves from the Underground. For more information about the music, interviews, and guests from this episode, visit slugmag.com. If you have questions, comments, concerns, or an angry thought about the show, send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. Our associate producers are Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. And our executive producer is Angela H. Brown.
Our show's theme and music was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design by T. Doan, technical design by Kate O'Connor, with audio mastering from Andrew Glassett. Special thanks to Adam Sherlock and Eric Tomorrow for their help and support. Join us next week as we check out the Heel to Toe project, get back into the archives with Touche Amore, preview November's Localized, and hear the latest around town from Yelp.